You're listening to Classical Music here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. I'm your host, Matt Jackford. Here with a very special guest, euphonium extraordinaire Stephen Mead, who has received worldwide recognition for his euphonium playing. Stephen tours all around the world. In fact, he just finished a five-week tour over several countries, and he's here with us to talk about it. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Hi, Matthew. It's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
So where exactly in the world are you calling us from?
Now I'm in the little village of Fenny Drayton in the East Midlands district of UK. So I'm home again for a couple of weeks now, which is great because I've pretty much been on the road since the end of June. And then we had that spell from the middle of July until the middle of August where I was on the road. So good to be home, actually.
Now, I have all the cities you visited during this five-week tour, but I'm kind of curious to see if you can list them all. There's just so many.
Well, of course. Well, during July, I actually had three weekends at the World Music Competition, the WMC, in Kerkrade in the Netherlands. This is like an Olympic Games of music competitions held every 4 years. And I was really honored to be invited to be on a very special jury that adjudicated all the concert division, all the top wind bands and fanfare bands. And we did that three weekends. So from the second weekend in January, I did three weekends there. And in between the second and third, I went to Italy. I went to Bressanone, which is in that beautiful area between Italy and Austria, kind of in the mountains, and they speak Italian and German, and they kind of argue whether they're Italian or German. That beautiful. So that was the first kind of main summer course I did on the tour. And then I went back to the Netherlands at the weekend following the course. Really crazy travel, getting up at really crazy hours to get an early flight back to the Netherlands to finish off there. And then the next place I went to was Trakai in Lithuania. And that's a course I've been doing now. This is my 13th straight year. It's an amazing course at an amazing place. Trakai is quite a small town, although it is growing, it must be said. Set on the edge of a lake with a medieval castle in the middle. Do you need me to take a breather? Are you okay so far?
No, keep going.
Okay, so when I finished there, I had to go to South Korea. So I'm the artistic director of the Jeju International Wind Ensemble Festival, now in its 22nd year. And this is held on the island of Jeju, which is about 200 miles south of the mainland of South Korea. And this is developed into a really amazing international festival. We had around 28 bands, over 3,000 performing musicians, and four solo competitions with over 300 participants in total. And that spread over basically 9 days. It's magical. It's a mixture of beautiful music, meeting friends that you know from around the world, members of the juries and students in the competitions, and mostly Asian bands, but there's always one or two from the US or Germany. And part of their mission is to take music to all corners of the island. So we found ourselves playing a concert underground in a huge cave network, which they've just started as a concert venue. We went right to the south of the island, playing in a like a piazza surrounded by high walls and big audiences. Everywhere we go, there's 200 plus. And the Koreans just love live music. They're one of the best audiences you'll ever play for. They clap and they cheer like they've never heard music like this before, and they probably haven't actually. And if it's anything with a beat, they all clap along.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, you pick your programs knowing when they're going to start clapping, and you know, unfortunately, they clap on 1 and 3 rather than 2 and 4. So it's drives musicians crazy. So we did that, and then after that festival finished, I had 2 days in Seoul, in the capital, so that's a flight to the mainland, and I teamed up with a brass ensemble from Spain called Palencia. Everybody kept saying, oh, you mean Valencia? No, it's Palencia Brass Ensemble, And that was a 30-piece orchestral brass. So it's like a normal orchestral brass, but doubled and doubled again. A mixture of pro players and youngsters. I think the youngest was like 11 years old. And they played really well, had a great time. Audiences loved them. I did that. And then I went to Qingdao in China. I was invited there by, indirectly through an ex-student of mine at the Royal Northern College of Music, Gong Hongliang. He went back to China and is now making great inroads as a conductor and musical entrepreneur, I suppose, in Beijing. And he had a friend in Qingdao, which is one of these great cities in China, which is growing, which has new status in China. And they don't have a lot of traditional kind of art ensembles, and certainly brass tuition is really in its infancy. So although it has more than 10 million people, you're aware that arts are not top of the list. So they put together an ensemble of around 25 of the best young wind and brass players in the area. So my wife Misa and I, she was already in Japan, so we met there and we did some rehearsals, and then we ended up together playing on a TV show for the whole of Qingdao, which was basically recorded live. I think it's being broadcast this week. So
of the Gypsy Song from Bizet's opera Carmen, performed in a duet by Stephen Mead and Misa Mead on euphonium. That was recorded during a live broadcast in Qingdao, China.
That was the final leg back to Seoul to get the return leg home, and then a weary journey from Heathrow by train to my house and by taxi, and finally fell inside my front door. Last Wednesday evening, literally. I even got the taxi driver to carry my suitcase through the door. I was that tired. So there we are. It's been an adventure, different climates, different languages, different food, different everything, And the one thing everyone has in common is that they love music making and, fortunately appreciate what I do with the euphonium, and also in Jeju, a fair bit of organizational stuff. So I like that, and I believe in that festival so much, I'm happy to wear another hat sometimes while I'm there.
Right, exactly. So how did this tour all come about? Did you have someone, do you do your booking, or does somebody else do it for you? Or
Yeah, Yeah, I do my own booking. And as my wife says, if somebody else was organizing it, they'd never make a schedule like that. And yes. Just simple things like, you know, to be honest, I love the work. I love traveling. I love playing. You know, obviously the body has its own physical resources to draw on. But simple things like you're carrying a 24-kilogram suitcase around and every 4 or 5 days you need to wash your clothes. So it was simple things like finding a laundromat or something where you can just wash your clothes. I mean, I know some people that kind of throw away clothes on the tour and keep buying new clothes, but I kind of get attached to my clothes, you know.
Yeah.
There was one funny post I made on Facebook. I think it was about 8:30 in the morning on a Sunday morning in Jeju. I knew there was a laundromat I'd used before, put some clothes in my suitcase, walked there. I was the only one awake at that time of the morning, and I was sitting listening to Beethoven's string quartets, watching my washing going around and around in Jeju, you know, 6,000 miles away from home. And it just struck me how bizarre a musician's life can be sometimes, you know. But really, I loved every minute of it.
Right. I mean, that's the thing with live music is that you have to be there to play. You can't just Skype in or call in. You have to be physically present in order to play it live in front of people.
Yeah, let's hope that never changes. You know, it's not easy traveling with big instruments, and some months, some years, you feel that certain airlines are almost ganging up on musicians. But I was pretty lucky. The only bad experience I had with traveling was with a British company called Fly B. I tried to book a seat for my instrument, and I phoned them up and they said, well, what is it? And I said, well, it's a euphonium. You know, what's that? The usual question. How big is it? I gave them approximate dimensions. And then they said, okay, euphonium. Is that a cello? So you know what kind of person you're dealing with when all of a sudden that's the question. And I said, no, it's not a cello, but it's the brass equivalent, but it's not a cello. No, it's not a cello. I'm sorry, sir, you can't book a seat. It has to be a cello. And I said, wow, I talk about discrimination. I tried to speak to somebody higher up in the company that, you know, they said, oh, they'll review it and they'll call you back. And they didn't. So I put on Facebook, you know, where everything happens, you know, this experience. And people said, I had some contact from the guys from Menozzo Brass who traveled. The tuba player in Menozzo Brass just calls his instrument a cello. Is this a cello? Yes, it's a cello. I also noticed that I could take an extra suitcase for like 30 US. So I also noticed that there was no size limit on that. So I found a ginormous cardboard box. I went to the local tip, found the cardboard place, and I asked the guy in charge, could he find me a ginormous cardboard box, which he did. And so I thought, right, Flybe, I'll play you at your own game. So I paid for the extra suitcase. I took my gig bag with my euphonium, wrapped it with all my clothes and other padding, checked in a half-empty suitcase and this ginormous box, and they said, yeah, no problem.
I saw a picture of you on Facebook where you jumped in the box at one point.
Yes, I did. I had a moment of madness. So I got this box back, and I thought, you know, I could fit in here. So I actually jumped in. I said to my wife, grab my phone, just take a video. And it was so uncomfortable, but I did manage to a quick rendition of Fly Me to the Moon, which I thought was quite appropriate.
This should be okay.
And it got over 1,000 likes on Facebook, so it must have hit a chord with a lot of musicians.
Right. I liked it myself. So you go around to all these cities. What sort of repertoire do you often play? Do you switch it up? Do you play the same thing? Or
No, I very rarely play the same thing. It's interesting because you have to get the ethos of a festival. See, if you know, it's not like you play. If I was a violinist and I play the Elgar Cello Concerto and a few others, and that's your rep. As a brass player, certainly as a euphonium player, I can't just say, I just play Ponchielli, I just play, you know, you can't. You have to fit the repertoire to the occasion where you're playing. So I played Bravura Variations, which is like variations on Twinkle Twinkle Little Star in the style of Mozart. And then I played Aces by Frank Giulino. You probably know Frank Giulino, who's a young trombonist composer in the US. He wrote me a couple of pieces. So that was fun. And then I played with the band, the large wind band, the Green Hill, which is a very popular European euphonium solo in a kind of a Celtic style in the final concert. With Sound in Brass, we had I played solos ranging from Chick Corea's Spain. First movement of the Mozart Bassoon Concerto, to Pantomime, Carrickfergus, Neath the Dublin Skies, another Celtic kind of river dance type of piece. But I like the things that drive me to practice another half an hour, another hour, practice it slowly. When you wake up in the morning, you know you have to play that piece. For me, that's the challenge. You know, I've never chosen an easy life as a musician, you know, with the scheduling, with, you know, fearlessly walking to any hall in the world and trying to do your best. So there's, you know, you have to be a little bit crazy. I hope I'm not sounding too crazy here, but you have to be
just a little bit. I'm just kidding.
He said, laughing weirdly. I get emails from people say, so tell me, what does it take to be a euphonium solo? How do I get there, you know, to do your job? And it's, you know, you could just say, well, just practice and, you know, go to take part in classes. But you've got to really want it so bad. You've really got to have something inside you that says you have to play and there's nothing else that you want to do. And then you find solutions to everything on the way.
So do you find it hard to relaxing time and resting time?
It's funny because I really love what I do. So to some extent, when I'm home, it's always like, okay, we've got to get out of here. And then when I'm away, I think about how wonderful it is being at home. I can't really explain that. But right now, having had some of June and all of July and August on the road, it's really great to be home, and I nap in the afternoon and I practice for an hour and then I sleep for an hour and I feel terrible. I mean, like unemployed, because it's just in my mentality, but my body is kind of nodding in appreciation, like, yeah, just take a nap. It's fine.
Yeah, you deserve it, right?
Well, I think so. My parents, every time I speak to my parents, you know, all they can say is, oh, you should relax more. You know, if I took the advice of close family and friends, I wouldn't do anything. Just sit at home and what? Listen to my CDs, you know, cheer me up a bit. No. So, yeah, I'm learning to relax. You know, everyone says, Steve, you're 55, not 25 or even 30 or 40, you know. So I am trying to be sensible, but I still love to play. You know, the best part of my day is sitting behind the euphonium. And around lunchtime today, I opened my filing cabinet marked sonatas, and I played through about 8 sonatas, not yours, because I know yours, and I played it recently, but ones that I haven't played for 10 or 20 years. And it's great. There's nothing gives me greater pleasure. You know, somebody else will go on a bike or go on a squash court or, you know, go to wherever. For me, sitting at home playing the euphonium and trying to play it the best I can is just, yeah, the most wonderful feeling in the world. And the day that stops, the day, you know, the garden will look more appealing.
Right. Well, it sounds like you're in the right sort of work. If that's what your passion is, then that's what you should be doing, and it doesn't seem like work. It just seems like you're doing what you want to do.
Yeah. See, I always look back to when I was 14 or 15, and people ask me, you know, I remember my careers teacher, Mead, what are you going to do with your music? And I said, I'm going to play euphonium, sir. And he spent half an hour trying to convince me that that wasn't possible, and I had to start being realistic. And you know, there was a strong element of truth in what he was saying, but I knew that I had to find a way. So once I found that way, you know, there was sure as hell I wasn't going to give it up. You know, it's a life's mission now. It's inescapable. At the same time, I still enjoy it. So, yeah, I have no alternative.
Yeah, right. There's no choice. You're not even making a choice. It's just you have to do it.
Yeah, that's really how it feels, yeah.
That's great. So what was one of your favorite stories from your five-week tour?
Oh, gosh.
I know, I'm putting you on the spot here because I'm sure there's many.
You mean on stage? Or
anywhere. I remember the cable car was from your Facebook post.
The cable car was fun, yeah. So I was with the group from Alpen Classica. And we'd worked like three days nonstop, like 9 o'clock warm-ups, 10 o'clock lesson started. Then we went through to lunch and then diligently working through till 6 o'clock. And then we were exhausted, had dinner and basically had a pint somewhere and then slept. So on the last morning, and the weather had cleared as well. We had a lot of rain that week. There were one of the boys, Tobias Reifer, actually was from Bressanone. And he said, why don't we go up the cable car and let's take our instruments and maybe play for some people. I said, brilliant, perfect idea. And on the way back, I said to Tobias, right, it's about 2 minutes we have, maybe 3 minutes in the cable car, maybe longer than that. Let's play on the way down. So we got the translator girl said she'd take the pictures. And so we just sat in and I started going down. What do you want to play? What do you know? Carnival of Venice. We completely winged it and it was fine, and lots of strange looks and appreciative waves from people going in the other direction. That was nice. And Tobias did really well. He's a young lad. He's 19 years of age, and we made a nice little duo which is captured on video. And the strangest thing is, of course, like every couple of hundred meters you get to a junction point and you have to go over it, and the cable car drops, and we couldn't stop playing at those moments. There's one place where I kind of closed my eyes to try and keep focusing. But that's the beautiful thing about summer events, that you can, you know, you have that freedom. You don't have to plan everything like you do during a normal academic year as a teacher or as a student. You can just enjoy those moments when they come along. And it certainly makes life a little more fun and worth living, and it makes you pleased to be alive. You know, it's a great feeling.
You went to Qingdao, China, which is a place I've actually been. I studied music and Chinese there for you. What?
Ah.
Yeah. What did you think of that city? It's.
Well, I mean, it's big. I mean, we were on one part of. Well, I thought we were in the center of Qingdao, and then we went for lunch, and he said we're going to go to the center. I'm like, oh, another center. It's amazing. The food. I mean, everywhere you go, the smell of wonderful food is in the air. You must remember that from where you were.
Distinctly, yes.
Yeah.
Did you have the seafood?
We had everything, you know, everywhere we went, you know, what do you want? I want the best. Well, not the best. I want the local stuff, you know. They kept saying, do you want Western food? No. I want Chinese food. And we had all sorts of things. You know, we went to a restaurant the first day and we saw tanks of fish, including, you know, dogfish and sturgeon and turtles swimming around, all, you know. And my wife and I had a debate whether we should eat the turtle or not. And I said, no, I've just given him a name, Terry the Turtle, and we're not eating him because he has a name. So people have their own preconceptions about what China's like, but we have nothing but good feelings. The people were very warm, very generous to us. You know, everywhere we went for a meal, we always seemed to have like 10 times more food than we could ever eat. You know, and when we questioned it, like, I'm sorry, you know, I'm not hungry. I can't, you know, eat all this. Oh, no. It's Chinese hospitality. We want you to feel welcome, you know.
Right. You know. Yeah, you have to eat.
Yeah. I mean, I can't. I have to keep my weight about the same, you know, to function normally. You know, for me, touring is not about eating as much good food as you can. It's eating enough to be well and do the job. I've never really been different from that. And they put on a beach barbecue when we left, and they lit a fire, you know, to wish us good luck in the future. And just nice human things, you know, that I think we maybe lose sight of a little bit in our regular lives. So that for me is very life-affirming, the fact that there's good people around the world everywhere, despite the doom and gloom we read in the newspapers and see in the media. For me, that's why I tour. People say, oh, you know, why do you go on the road? Well, one day I'll write a book about it, and then everyone will really appreciate how much I've learned, you know, as a musician, as a human being, playing music to people around the world. For me, it's a fairly unique privilege that I have, and never, ever take it for granted. Yeah. Thank you.
was a performance of The Devil's Waltz by Steven Verhelst, performed in an unaccompanied duet by Stephen Mead and Misa Mead on euphonium. That was recorded during a live broadcast in Qingdao, China. So after Qingdao, that was you were able to fly back home to Heathrow?
Yeah, I had to go back to Seoul first because the international routing was basically, you know, Europe to Seoul, and then I went to Jeju, and then I went to China from Seoul. So we, you know, it was just easier that way. But it was fine. I slept a lot of the way back, but that was a day flight, and I'm never very good at sleeping on day flights. So that left at like 2 p.m. We traveled for 12 hours, and I got into Heathrow around 5 p.m. So that's kind of strange. So by the time I got home, it was like 6 a.m. in the morning, you know, Korean time. So that's when you know you're messed up.
Right, everything's backwards.
Yeah.
A little bit of jet lag.
Look, it's a small price to pay, isn't it, really, for those experiences?
Right, exactly. That's the thing. It's that you get to go and experience cultures and things that, you know, most people don't get to experience on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
Really world-expanding view.
And people say, oh, you know, how long do you think you can keep this up? Well, you know, as long as I can still play and people want me to play and I want to do it, I'll keep doing it. You know, there'll come a point where I just rationalize things a bit more and say, look, I'm just going to do 3 weeks in the summer and I want spaces at home between, you know. But I hope that doesn't come too soon because, you know, I'm not 35, I'm 55, but neither am I 75. So I'm going to try and stay at full power for a while.
That's great. It sounds like it's keeping you going, keeping you motivated, and keeping you fresh.
Yeah, I think that's important in life. And, you know, people have their own ways of keeping fresh and revitalizing. But, you know, it's a big world. And I look at the diary and I see things for the next 12 months and I'm excited that I'm going there, you know. And that makes you practice, makes you try and keep your standards up for sure.
Right. Well, Stephen Mead, euphonium extraordinaire, who has been touring around the world, finished a 5-week tour just now, and he's back at home, flopped into bed, taking some naps, getting some revitalization.
That's exactly what
I'm doing. So thank you so much, Stephen, for talking with us today.
Pleasure, Matthew. It's great to play your music, and it's great to have a chat with you, and I hope your listeners have enjoyed this a little bit. Yeah.